so excited to be speaking with Jeanette Barrow today. Jeanette is a powerful medium who is clairaudient, clairvoyant, clairsentient, and claircognizant. If you're not sure what that means, we'll fill you in. She is also the founder of Avalon Spirit, which is a digital platform that provides guidance and resources to help you on your journey to live a life full of purpose and connection. She also had a near-death experience that awakened her in a way that she couldn't have imagined. There is intuition and connecting us. Let's get going. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so excited.
Should we dive in?
Oh, I'm ready.
Well, even from the open, there's just so much to discuss. Okay, so even from the intro, we brought up clairs, which not everybody knows what that even means. When we talk about clairaudience and clairvoyant and clairsentience and claircognizance, some may have heard those terms, but I would say most haven't. Have you always had these gifts, and can you explain what they are?
Yeah, so the clairs, as I call them, basically is saying I can see, hear, and feel spirit, and they can also give me direct knowings. Now, in terms of have I always had these, they kind of revealed themselves over time. So my clairsentient ability, which most of us are quite naturally clairsentient. We are empathic. We feel stuff in our body, whether we physically feel it, emotionally feel it. Our body registers an energy of communication. And so that really is clairsentience. And so that one was my first and strongest one. And then it kind of evolved from there. My guides are reminding me, and by the way, my guides are with me all the time. So they just pop through regularly, but they're saying, no, don't forget when you were five, you would know stuff. And I'm like, okay, true. So clairsentience, the feeling of things, was something that was very common, as well as claircognizance, because they're reminding me how I would know they were in my room at nighttime when I was little, but I couldn't see them yet. But I could feel them and I knew they were there. And I didn't grow up in a family of mediums, or we didn't talk about that kind of stuff, but I knew they were there. And it became clear later in life that there was often a dozen of them. My counsel was often with me. It was terrifying though, because at the time I didn't understand that and I didn't have the communication or the ability to communicate with them clearly to understand what it was, but I had a knowing.
When you talk about that and you're thinking about that when you're five, and for those listening, for Karen and I, how did you know? As you said, you didn't see them. And when you say you felt them, did it feel scary or did you feel supported?
To me, it was scary, to be honest. I didn't feel a personal threat to my life. So it wasn't scary like that. It wasn't like a boogeyman type scary is going to take me away. But I knew there was beings standing in my room, but I couldn't see them. So it's almost like when you're blindfolded in the dark and you're wondering like, where is it coming at? I was always anticipating seeing them. I was afraid to close my eyes because if I opened my eyes, I would think they were there because I could feel they were there. So it was more like that. So then if we connect that to parents with kids right now who are saying they feel someone in the room, it's like, don't tell them they're not, but find a way to explain that, you know, if you are feeling that, you can ask them to go away, or they can't hurt you. They're just here. They're angels. They love you. Stuff like that. If it's a general thing, obviously, if they're saying something that's a little heavier, like there's a person in the corner saying mean things, well, then you have to do other steps to clear that space. But in general, if they just feel it, acknowledge them, because I think some of the hardest things is when we feel or know something really strong, and then someone tells us we're wrong, and we start to lose the trust.
Yes.
Especially a little kid too, because it's like where the imaginary friends kind of arise. I remember my daughter saying she had this imaginary friend and she could describe her and they would actually have conversations. Did you ever have communication?
No, I didn't have that communication when I was little. That came later in my teens is when it started to come in, which was also creepy in itself, because then that started to come in as hearing them. But when we hear spirit, we don't always hear them audibly, like an external voice. Sometimes we can, and if you're not ready for that, that can be creepy. But we can also hear it in our mind, either as a separate voice or as just a voice. And so then that's when a lot of people start to question, am I hearing things? Have I lost my mind, as they say? And so again, not having the direction or somebody who knew mediumship in my family, that was a hard one to navigate. Because I was like, well, now I'm crazy. That led me to a big journey of anxiety, which I realize now was pivotal for my experience as a medium was to be able to recognize what is mine and what is not, and where is my control again. It taught me how to control my mind, which has been the foundation for experiencing and exploring mediumship. So as hard as that was, it was needed in my foundation. And so it was after that that I started. 15, I saw my grandmother after she passed, and then it just kind of developed from there. So it kind of came in stages of what was tolerable according to my guides, because for me, oftentimes I would have said it wasn't tolerable. But retrospectively now, I look back on it with just so much gratitude for how it was revealed, even through the challenging points, because those were foundational pieces that really were asking me, what am I going to do now?
Wow. Well, and when you say that you saw your grandmother, was that clairvoyant? How did you see her? Was that in your mind's eye, or was that in front of you?
Yeah. My grandmother, she was the first one that I saw for sure in spirit, but she came through in dream state. So what happened after she had passed, her and I were really close, but we never talked about her visiting me after she passed. We never discussed those kinds of things. When my grandmother passed, I remember being terrified she would visit me. I don't know why, again, a claircognizant knowing she would come visit me. I was terrified. And I remember spending the first 2 weeks every night going to bed terrified. Literally saying, please don't scare me. Please don't scare me. Please don't scare me. And I would finally fall asleep. And finally, about 2 weeks after, once I kind of settled my energy, realizing like, okay, she's not gonna come scare me. She came through in a dream, but I had fallen asleep and she walked into my bedroom door in her white blouse that she would wear with her royal blue slacks that she would wear. And I remember she walked in and I sat up and I was like, you found a way to do this without scaring me. And she said, yes, I would never want to scare you. So I had to wait. And she's like, I'm wanting you to know that I'm okay. And she came and sat on my bed and I put my head on her lap and she just was kind of like rubbing my hair. And she's like, I am okay. I am so okay where I am. And so that was my first real spirit communication of like conversation. But the first one had to come through in that state so I would be relaxed enough. And then it just grew over time where I saw other family members after they'd passed, sometimes visually, sometimes in my mind's eye. One time my uncle came through while I was driving on a mountain highway, and I didn't realize I was going really fast because I had the music on, and all of a sudden I saw this hand come through from another realm. It sounds creepy, but it's like this hand came through and turned my radio volume up super loud, and I was like, what was that? And I looked over and it was my uncle, and he cranked the volume, and as soon as I saw the volume, I looked at my speedometer and I was going way too fast, and I was like, oh, I get it. And he's like, you need to slow down.
And you knew it was your uncle. How did you know?
It was like his voice and his knowing and then his arm all at the same time. And that's the thing, the recognition of spirit communications doesn't always happen in the linear time. For us, it's just this divine experience. And those were ones that just kind of happened to me. And then it grew and evolved to when I met my lifetime guide and he literally called my name down the hallway. I think I shared that story with you.
Yes, you need to tell that story.
Yeah, let's please share.
So this was when spirit was coming in and basically telling me, Jeanette, it is time to step up. Okay. Enough running and hiding. You need to step into who you are. This was beginning early 20s. And I was doing laundry in my bedroom and I hear this voice. I'm home by myself. I had my cat at home by myself, folding laundry on my bed. And I hear this male voice say, Jeanette, look down the hall. And I was like, what? Right? It just like my heart stopped and it was this audible voice and I refused to look. And I think I probably said every profanity I could think of out of, you know, being fearful in that moment. And again, he's like, Jeanette, look down the hall. And so I remember I was holding my laundry, shaking, and just so slowly turned my head. And at the end of my hallway, sort of like a hologram, but very visual hologram, like this wasn't in my mind's eye, it was outside for my eyes to see, was this man in military fatigues. He had a t-shirt on, like a tan colored t-shirt, combat pants, and his boots. And he was standing there at the end of my hallway, dark hair. And the thing that changed for me in that moment was my cat was sitting in front of him, looking up at him, wagging her tail. And so I knew that she saw him. And this was after I'd had all my anxiety and wondering, you know, am I crazy? Am I not? And I'd found the way through my own mind and had settled again. And then spirit was like, all right, now that she's done that, we're going to bring in visuals. And so that's when they just really brought it home with Andre, my guide. But it was a moment that When I saw my cat see him, I knew for me that I wasn't making it up. And so I almost felt this moment of liberation then that I was like, I am not going to run from this anymore. I am now going to learn everything I can. And so that was a pivotal moment of me deciding to dive in versus push it away.
And kind of funny, validation by a cat.
Right.
Yes, I love that.
Totally.
Yes. And there are little angels here on earth. So when you say that was the moment you really accepted that you wanted to dive in, what did you do? What did that mean for you?
So I think opening to spiritual things, especially spiritual gifts, if we could call it that, is an unraveling of your limitations. So you're having to confront anywhere that you have a limitation and discover how you're going to unravel it. So what I needed to do first, because I am also a very brainy person, I needed to gather a lot of information. So I started watching every show I could about ghost hunters, paranormal experiences, mediums. I just dove into immersing myself in everything I could get to give me tools to make sense of what was happening. So I did that. I read a lot of books. And then it kind of led me into joining a mediumship circle. And through that, I met two beautiful mentors that helped me kind of at different stages to really help me open up. And it was just continually being willing to meet and open up the limitations. And I can say that very easy. That's not a super smooth ride, as I'm sure most people can attest to with spiritual things. There's some times where you really meet something, a concept, an understanding that challenges so much of who you are. And so sometimes I would meet something and be like, I can't even wrap my brain around that at all. So I'm just going to leave it there for a while. And then 2 years would pass and suddenly I would have the foundation pieces to come back to that. And it would just open and blossom. So it's just a progression.
I love the way you put that about unraveling the limitation. Yeah. Oh my goodness. What a good way to look at it.
That's an aha for people, I think, because when you're dabbling in this world, it can feel very daunting. And yet it takes a while for it to be looked at as a gift, doesn't it? Like so many of us, I don't have the extent of your gift that you practice, but I think that there's so many of us that do have like this little yearning to explore and do more. And yet we put that wall up. And yet that is your gift. That is what you came to do and practice.
So what I find interesting, and I have done this too, but I've also witnessed other people do this, is we have a desire sometimes as humans to be like, give me all the information. We are so used to Googling something, looking this up, having instant access to information. And I find with spiritual things or accessing different realms or them becoming real, we want it, but it will be revealed in a timing that works with you, which may be different, because I have had some friends who are very gifted, very, very gifted in their own right, but not in clairvoyance. They may be very clairsentient, claircognizant, so they know stuff, they feel stuff, but they don't see stuff. And sometimes I've seen it where spirit decided to turn that on for them, and them suddenly seeing a whole bunch of things in the room just totally short-circuited.
What a good point.
Reality in that too much. So I think that's also a thing to remember when we're on this path, is to really move with the ebb and flow of the information and the openings. Because if I was to take everything that I can access or know now, and say I had been given that download that day with Andre in my hallway with my cat, if they just suddenly were like, zoop, now you can do all of that, I think it would have actually essentially fried my mental construct of this reality. It would have bent it too far and it would have been too hard to recalibrate.
And to that point, where was kinesiology at that point in your life? Because that's something that I know you studied and you practice. Was that an inkling that you thought maybe, well, I'll try to prove certain things in a way that's somewhat different, but kind of almost like these hints that you had growing up? And so tell us, where did that...
And explain what kinesiology is.
Thank you. Yes.
Sure. So as this was all opening up, I did a degree in kinesiology. So that is kind of like secondary stage rehab care, rehabilitation, taking people from injury to rehabilitating that into getting back into the sport or the activity that they like. So it's not physio where they're just kind of doing heat and ultrasound and stuff, but it's the next stage before you can get back into training. So I dove into kinesiology. I love the physical body. I love physiology and anatomy and all of that. And so in that time in my life, I was wanting to be very left-brained because I'd found solace there. After my anxiety experience of around 16, 17, 18, I found solace in understanding the mind and how to control it and how to utilize it from very psychological perspectives, which also to me aligned with the body and the physiology, what we put in in our bodies helps all of this stuff. It all fit. And so here I am learning about very physical things, doing scientific studies of what are your results and what are they based on and all fact and stuff, while I'm sitting there seeing my professor's auras in the room and I'm trying to focus. I'm like, it must be my eyes. I should get some glasses, get my glasses, and nope, he's still blue. Like, there was this real like push, pull, tug in my life of not knowing how to walk in both worlds, not realizing I didn't have to choose, right? I was thinking it had to be one or the other, but really it comes back to mind, body, spirit, wellness, which my kinesiology really feel was spirit saying, let's give you a really good understanding of the body. We're going to give you a really good understanding of the mind with your anxiety and learning how to do that. And then we're going to give you those two foundations to help you figure out spirit, because you need to understand all of them if you are going to be a human on this planet talking about spiritual stuff. So again, this progression in retrospect makes sense, but when you're going through it, you're like, what am I doing?
And I love how you're grappling to stay grounded in the science of it while the rest of you is kind of going through this whole. I think it's really common though. I think a lot of people are almost like trained that way. It's like, no, I have to keep both feet in the physical world. I'm glad you took the leap.
Yeah, right? It's a big leap. That's for sure.
So then where did your near-death experience fall into all of this? Because Karen and I happen to know that this was another phase of your opening.
So by the time of my near-death experience, which was August 2019, I had already been doing mediumship for a decade.
Oh, wow. So when did you decide that you were going to make that your profession?
Yeah, so when I was already done my degree and practicing as a kinesiologist, I was also somewhat practicing as a medium, but on the down low.
Got it.
So with my clients and stuff, I could know if they were maxing out on their exercises because I would feel them, not just what I was perceiving, not their rate of exertion, all those things, but I would literally feel it. I would see someone's aura. One time a client came in and I was like, you are not fit to train today. Your aura is murky green. You're ill. And he's like, yeah, my lungs are really bad. And so I was like, you got to go home. So basically what happened with kinesiology is I started getting too busy with mediumship that it kind of like one took over the other, which is really funny. So by the time of my near-death experience, I already had logged thousands of hours in readings with clients, already out in the open, not on the down low anymore. I'd already spent a lot of time in session, talking to spirits, understanding death from the spirit perspective, understanding transition, approaching transition points, the feeling of death in the very many different ways. But I could never go closer than three steps. I would literally see if I was walking a soul to cross over, because there were some circumstances where I was able to help a soul let go. And so I could walk them to this beautiful glowing doorway, but it would have three steps and I could not get closer than three steps. And if I did, my soul or my energy was repelled backwards and would flip over itself and I would go away because the draw to that light is so strong. So I would often be able to observe spirits on the other side. I can see them. They're fishing in a lake. They're on this grassy knoll, but I can't go there. I can only open my vision to see what's there. It's like either looking through a window or a telescope and seeing. But the thing that was vastly different with my near-death experience is I was literally, my feet were on the ground there.
Wow.
On the other side of that door. And I knew instantly when my feet were on the ground, I knew exactly where I was. There was no questioning like, ooh, am I? Or is this an astral travel? Because it was even vastly different than my astral travels. Because
you have to talk about two now.
I agree. Now people need to know what that means. Most have not heard of that.
Right. So astral travel, real quickly, is when a lot of our consciousness leaves the body, often in dream state. A lot of us astral travel when we're in dream state. Basically, our soul, majority of it, goes into the astral realm, which is the higher realms, and we can go different places, see different things, communicate with different people. This is where science is even starting to prove the validity of astral projection. It's basically going into higher realms of consciousness to perceive things, locations, people, so on. So that's an astral travel. That's all done in like a meditative or dream state where the body is relaxed and a piece of the soul is projected. A near-death experience, though, is when the soul is on the other side, still connected, though, to the body by that silver cord, they often explain it as. And until that silver cord is severed, then the person is still connected. And once it's severed, then they are fully on the other side, not coming back. So near-death experiences can happen when someone literally does physically die, their physical body dies. Near-death experiences can happen when people are in comas or can happen when people are in surgery. So it's basically any time that enough of the human self is surrendered, basically, that the soul can pop out while still connected, visit around, and then choose whatever it is they're going to do. So that's kind of the difference.
Thank you. So tell everybody what happened to you.
Yeah. So for me, my near-death experience landed on my journey very much destined, although I didn't realize that until after. Again, retrospect is a beautiful teacher of clarity. For me, I had been struggling with hemorrhaging in my monthly cycle for years. And it basically led me to finally having to have surgery to try and mend that situation. Now, what I realized now was that surgery was an opportunity for me to hit one of my exit points that was predetermined. And so what happened is when I was going into surgery, I remember having this utter excitement for surgery. And I've had surgery before, and I'm not usually like, yeah, let's go. Let's get this done. I'm kind of a little unnerving. But there was this weird excitement in this experience. And so I remember assuming that I'll probably have an astral travel or some sort of experience. But as soon as they gave me the gas to kind of knock me out, I just appeared on the other side.
Wow. Wow. That's so unbelievable.
And I remember my feet walking on this grass, this beautiful green grass. And I'm walking on it, knowing where I am and being completely okay with it. And I could see every blade of grass if I looked, but not by bending over. I could see whatever I wanted to see. It was vivid. We don't have the words on our planet to explain it. And I've explained it so many times. And still, every time I do, I'm like, there's got to be another word. There's got to be a better descriptor of it. But it was the most beautiful green, lush grass that I could see the detail if I wanted of every blade while walking on it. It was so soft. And then I remember the sky was so beautiful, summer sky blue. And I walked up to where there was a barbecue picnic setting, which is funny because I would have thought if I was creating my afterlife, I would be in the tropics. That's what I would have thought. But it was this beautiful summer family reunion barbecue. I could see the checkered white and red tablecloths. And my grandma's the one that brought me there, and she'd already passed. And I remember seeing all of these souls that I had known from this lifetime, but also lifetimes before, and giving each and every one of them hugs, like these reunion hugs where you're like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen you in so long. And just catching up where we left off. And I felt like I spent hours there. My whole experience on the other side was about 20 minutes in human time. But I felt like I spent the whole morning and afternoon into the evening at this barbecue, reminiscing with people and souls that I'd known. And then after that, my grandmother then took me to this other place. We just appeared in this other place, which was at the end reaches of the galaxy, if I could put it that way. It was the point in which the universe is creating itself. It was this point. And I was in this white room with this white giant boardroom table, white walls, and these windows out to like galaxies. And my council was there, and they unrolled this blueprint. And I remember looking at it and kind of laughing and thinking like, oh my God, it looks like a blueprint. We have architect's blueprints. And because Spirit had always explained it to me like a tapestry, like we have this tapestry of our lives. And I always went to that as my explanation, but it, to me there, it was like this blueprint. So we rolled it out, and there was this iridescent line down the center that was still pulsing, kind of this like back and forth. And so I knew I wasn't dead, if that makes sense. There was still life in this blueprint. And so basically what we did is we reviewed everything I had done in my life up until that point. I had the life review that spirits have told me about. Oftentimes they watch, there's a video or a screen, but mine was almost like a parent-teacher interview, and the teacher's like, okay, so Jeanette's been doing this and this and this. But none of it was, there wasn't a judgment. It was more like celebrating every opportunity of triumph and pitfall because of what it brought. And so we did all that up until this specific juncture point of where I was. And that's when they asked me, do you want to stay or go back? And that's when I was like, oh, well, I want to go back. I didn't have to bargain with them. It wasn't like, please let me back. It was just, yeah, I want to go back. I have stuff I want to do and my family, and like, I'm not done yet. And I remember realizing how much from a soul perspective I valued my life experience. So that's a hard one to explain, how much my soul valued me, the person, which although they're one and the same, also feel different. Because this is the human perspective who sometimes is tired, sometimes is cranky, sometimes doesn't understand why the world is the way it is. But then there was the soul me that knew more and knew my reason for being here. So the soul me was like, yeah, I absolutely want to come back. And so this is where it then got even cooler. They said, okay, well, now since you're coming back with what you have remaining, which I don't know how long this is in reference to, it's about 6 inches. So I have 6 inches left on my paper, but I don't know how much we reviewed. I can't see it past my guide. So they said I could change out different junctures or fuses. So they looked like fuses on there, almost like on the subway, you know, when you see the sign and it's like lines and then there's these little circle spots of where the stops are.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. So I could pull out different fuses of things that no longer were needed in my life, which is basically how we create our life blueprints before we come in. We sit with our counsel at this table and create these destiny points of experiences. So since I was there, I then got to take out and rearrange several, and they told me you can rearrange as many as you want, but you will only remember consciously the first one. And so I was like, okay. And the first one was chronic health issues, because I always had chronic health issues. There was always something wrong with Jeanette. And so much of it had to do with my cycle specifically too. But I remember pulling it out like you would a fuse from a fuse box and holding it up and being like, I can really do this. And they're like, yeah, you can. And so then I put a different one in. And I remember when I put that in, I even thought, yeah, we'll see about this. And then I did that to several other ones. And so then they asked me one more time, are you sure you want to go back? And I was like, yes, I do. And so they said, several things will happen to you in rapid succession to really get you on your path. And then my grandmother brought me back. It all happened within milliseconds of each other, but I heard the nurse in the recovery room saying, Jeanette, are you awake? I felt myself go like whoop back into my body, and my higher self came through. So my soul self came through and spoke for me, because I'm a groggy, funny person usually at a surgery. I don't make sense. And I remember so clearly the moment she said, Jeanette, are you awake? It goes whoop in my body. And I said to the nurse, I need you to write something down. I'm a medium and this is really important. And she stopped what she was doing. She's like, okay, what do you want to say? And I wrote down these four different phrases. And then I said, and when you're done, fold them up, put them in my hand. I give her clear directions of what to do. Wow. And she did. And I held on to it. And then she went on with her stuff. And once they gave me pain meds and all of that, because I was sore after, and they wheeled me into recovery. And I remember I could barely open one eye at that point. And I saw my mom and I'm like, Mom, don't lose this. And so she put it in my change purse. And it wasn't until a couple days later, when I had no pain meds in my body, that Spirit was like, it's time to look at the paper. And so I did, and it was those four sentences brought that whole flood of experience back to me instantly. It just was there, and I started writing my book. And I remember I sat, my mom has a picture of it. My husband had the kids while I was recovering, so I was at my parents. And my mom has a picture of me sitting in the backyard with them telling my story for the very first time. I got to go to the other side.
Wow.
And it just was this amazing experience that then amplified my reach, my desire to share stories. So it pivotally, I don't even know what the word is, increased capacity or redefined my direction or gave it more purpose or something like that. So that's why that was such a big momentous thing on my journey, even though I'd already been a medium for a while.
Wow. Can you tell us what those four phrases were?
Yeah. So this is the paper from my surgery. So one of them was Great Baba, which is my grandma. She's Ukrainian, so we call her Baba. So it was that, tree roots, time to entwine, and went far. Most people would be like, well, what is that? But each of them, the frequency, the symbolism, they were all the things I needed to bring that energetic peace back. Just like we get with mantras or sacred words, right? They're frequencies through words to bring about an understanding. And it is still beyond my ability to fully explain.
Well, it feels like an unlocking. You had locked it before you left, and that was your code
to
unlock it, which we talked a little bit about frequencies before we started today. I think just talking about frequencies for a moment, I think is important to even have a greater understanding of what you're talking about, why those phrases meant something, why different energy in general can either close or unlock something for you, but you also have to pay attention.
Yeah. Right. And capture it in that moment. And just Jeanette, the third one, I want to make sure I heard you correctly. It was Great Baba, tree roots, time to what?
Entwine.
That's what I thought you said. I just want to make sure I heard that. What did that one mean to you?
That one for me was entwining with my higher self, bringing in more of my higher consciousness. I got to, so when a soul crosses over on the other side, they connect back with their higher self. So if you picture like a pie, and when we come down in a human experience, we come down as a slice of that pie. So a piece of our higher self comes down to be a slice of that pie, live our life and experiences, but we're always connected to that higher self. When we cross over, we connect back into that higher self, so we become the whole pie. And that's really an example of my soul self versus the me self. So I was entirely me as the soul self, but more. And so it was like entwining with my whole pie, right? Oh,
that's so cool. And I really hope everybody listening, the way that you explain that can help them better understand those concepts. I know it helps me.
It explains a bit too, I think, why people do feel disconnected from themselves, even in a way, because they are. They're disconnected from their soul, and figuring out that way to reconnect with who you really are. And how did you do that? How the time to entwine, how did you action that?
Well, what's so interesting is that leads back to frequency, like we were talking about. So our whole reality in 3D, even 4D, 5D, whichever one, is all based on frequency. So third dimensional reality, if we think about it, is a range of vibrating matter. So within 3.0 and 3.9, we'll say, there are many different ranges of speed of moving particles in this reality. It's a frequency. Frequencies will speak to us depending on how well we know our own frequency. So we recognize 3D reality frequency because we can see it. We can touch it. We can hold it. We know it to be real. We know that already. But when we start getting into higher frequency awareness, we're learning a new template, a new way of speed of particles and how they can show themselves. Okay, so that's one way. So if we apply that then to the human self, we are the resonant body of moving particles. We learned that in grade 8 science that all matter vibrates. We are made of matter, so we are vibrating particles. And as we ascend and grow in our consciousness, we increase the rate of frequency that we are. But we need to know who we are first so that we can have a reference point for anything else. So when people don't quite know where to even start to see where is the next right thing, what is my intuition, what does that feel like, how do I feel things? It's like, know who you are first. How do you feel about things, anything in your life? What does it feel like to be you in your body? What does it feel like when you eat something good? What does it feel like when you sit in the sun? What does it feel like when you play with kids? What does it feel like when you're angry? It's becoming aware of what it feels like to be you first, so that as soon as something different than you comes across your path that is not necessarily seen, but it's the energy, the frequency, you will recognize how it differs. And when you recognize that, you can ask yourself, does this differ in a way that I like it and it adds? Or does this differ in a way that it takes away or it's disharmonic? For me, it's like, I don't like that. And then that's when you start living in alignment with your frequency, which really is the basis of how all interactions take place, is based on frequency exchange. Do they match? Do they not? Do we want to step up and merge, or are we going to stay lower?
Yes. The way you described that, Jeanette, was perfect.
Well, and it also adds to your background as a kinesiologist. I feel like there's just no coincidence that here we are talking about frequency and measuring that, and your professional background before you even thought about becoming a professional medium or intuitive or healer teacher. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. It gave a really great foundation to understand that, and even how it plays into genetics and how our cells, you know, our cells are reborn on average on a yearly basis. If we just give a number, every year we renew our cells. Well, we renew them based on the frequencies of the food we eat. The thoughts we think, the environment we're in, is all frequency. If we give it the right stuff, it's going to reprise a better program. So, I mean, mind, body, spirit all ties in together, no matter what you do.
Well, you know, it also makes me think, just because I'm thinking about high frequency and low frequency, and it makes that phrase, misery loves company.
Yes.
Right? I just was thinking about...
Absolutely. I'll just speak from my own experience because I know everyone's is different. But if I am in a low frequency, if I'm really bummed out, or I am putting on the victim thinking hat because something really crappy happened, and maybe it was really not fair, but if I stay there, I'm going to stay really low. And the longer I stay there, the harder it's going to be for me to pick up and make it higher, because we have to then consciously choose. And that's the hardest thing, is we have to consciously choose to change our frequency, which... One of the easiest ways to heighten your frequency is laughter and joy. But we have to consciously choose that. And when we're really low, we sometimes don't want to. And so then we're choosing to then stay low. And so to actively change your frequency is a hard thing to do, which is why a lot of people get stuck. But here's the cool thing. My guides are like, share it. Is one of the easiest ways to change your frequency or to have help with it is using music.
Yes.
Yes.
Permeate.
Yes.
So if you're really low and you recognize, okay, I got to change this. I don't have the energy. I barely can get out of bed, but I know I have to change this. Put on, say it's Bob Marley, that changes the frequency and let that music merge with yours and it'll help pick you up. Mm-hmm. Music is so key.
It's so true.
Such good guidance.
Yeah. Can I jump in? I want to ask a little bit about your guides. You mentioned Andre earlier. Mm-hmm. Did he introduce himself as Andre? And then tell us about your other guides and how you got to know them as well.
Yeah. So Andre basically introduced himself that day in the hallway. That was his introduction. And it was after that that he told me his name, being Andre. So that afternoon is when he showed me who he was, told me his name. And then he came into my dreams several times to show me how he's been guiding me through my life. And so I've gotten to know him really well with this camaraderie. He's kind of like an older brother. He's funny. He can be very serious, but he's just comfortable. It's the best way I could explain it. So he's been my lifetime guide. I also have a couple different guides, but I have the three guides of the light. These three, they show themselves as three, but really they are light consciousness. So they are highly evolved consciousness that does not need to embody or have form besides light. What they did is when they came forward to me, they showed themselves as an outline of three figures. And they said, we're showing you this for your brain so you can understand we are a grouping of beings. We don't actually have bodies. We are light, light consciousness. So they bring through a ton of stuff often. I really enjoy them. I also have a couple other guides who are not of this planet. And this is where sometimes I'm cautious of how I refer to them. I usually call them light beings. Some people may call them aliens. Some call them higher beings of consciousness. Whatever your term is, they are not from this planet. They haven't been incarnated on this planet at present. They are Pleiadian, so they're from the Pleiades star system. They are quite lovely. When they came through to me at first, they came cloaked. So this was years and years ago. They came through cloaked. At this point, I had already started working as a medium with deceased loved ones and angels at the time. Deceased loved ones and angels. I'm okay with that. So these three came cloaked. And I remember when they approached, I said, oh, who are you? They had beautiful frequency. And they're like, we're not going to show you who we are yet. And I remember thinking at the time, oh, come on, you can show me who you are. I got this in the bag. I know how to do this. I think being a little cocky, they were like, no, you're not ready. And so we spent 3-4 months together working on stuff. They would teach me things or tell me things and they would happen. And they gained my trust. I truly appreciated all the time spent with them. And then came the day where they're like, we're going to show you who we are. And I'm like, okay, great. Awesome. So they pulled their cloaks off. And I remember Pleiades look very much like humans, but they're a little bit more bluish, taller, and they just look a bit different. Not like a traditional gray alien like people see in movies and stuff, but just different. They're 7-8 feet tall. Most of them have long hair. I remember when I saw them, I thought, well, thanks. You guys just ruined mediumship for me. Now I can't be medium anymore because that's where mediums go crazy when they start seeing aliens. Thank you so much. I quit. Right? And I literally did. I thought I could quit, which was my first mistake. I thought I could quit. And they said, this is why we didn't want to tell you or show you who we were until we gained your trust. Because we knew it would be hard on your mind's constructs at this point to understand who we are. And so then they just really backed off until I could bring myself together, which probably took me about a month or so. And then they've been a part of my council ever since, plus several other different ones. So, I mean, from ascended masters to beings of light to Pleiadians to other beings that have been on this planet, family members and friends, there's always a gathering of souls. Even different people that have incarnated on this planet before, I've had opportunities to converse with them. Even certain religious figures.
Wow.
It's always moving and growing, but three guides of the light, Pleiadians, Andre, they're my usual crew.
When you talk about Pleiadians or the beings of the light or other consciousness, I feel like a question that people may have is, why do they find you? What do they want to get across to you in this lifetime? What will that serve?
That's a great question.
And was that after your death experience that they came in or before?
Oh, that was before. It was before. Things were already wild before. So then it just opened up more after. And now I don't resist is basically what it is. They are here. Any of these higher beings, even spirits that have crossed over, I've talked to many people who were alive recently, last couple of years, have crossed with a purpose of helping humanity ascend. So whichever layer we're talking about, the planet Earth is not the only inhabited planet in all of the galaxies that are out there. That's a good way to kind of even start to crack that shell if that's overwhelming. It's just the probabilities. So then if we take that a next step further, within our solar system, we are not the only inhabited place based on dimensions even. Sure, the 3D land of Venus is too hot, so they say. But what about fourth dimension frequency and fifth dimension frequency, right? So that's even in our own solar system. Then if we look in our galaxy, there are many different worlds within our galaxy that are inhabited in some form based on probabilities. So what I'm getting at is that within our galaxy, we have several different groups or conglomerate groups of higher ascended civilizations that are wanting to help Earth and humanity ascend, because it is time for humanity as a species to ascend into this next level of consciousness, which is why a lot of people are awakening right now. We're not doing it alone. We have help, just as if I use Pleiadians, for example, from the Pleiades star system, they had help many, many moons ago in ascending and growing. So they've gone through the ascension process that Earth is going through right now, which is why they want to help. And many years from now, once Earth has ascended to that 5D status, Earth will then help some other place. Humans will be the new Pleiadians to some other group. So it's this helping and growing and expanding that is beyond simply our planet.
Oh my God. I mean, I could just talk about this forever.
And what I love is, I think for some people, this part of our conversation could be a stretch, but when you describe it that way, it does sound very logical.
Yeah.
It really does. It doesn't sound crazy. It doesn't sound far-fetched. It sounds like the right way for evolution to actually
happen.
And I think that's why now we are at a place where humanity is ascending enough to be having these conversations. I mean, with even different UFO documents being released now, there's a lot of things that have already been known, but it is a desire now to have it known more. So we realize we're so much more connected to many more things. We start kind of working together. And so I understand how it can be a stretch for people, because again, I had already trusted the Pleiadians. And then when I saw them, I was like, hard no. I needed to stretch further. So I get that. I think, though, we are very much primed at this time to be opening and expanding to this next level. All of humanity is being asked to step up in all of the ways. Technology, though, too. Not just consciousness, but technology and new ways of systems and new ways of societies and new ways of governance, right?
Yes. And when you are communicating with them from your own visions and what we're talking about with how we are ready and everything is seems to be moving forward, and it seems to be moving forward faster. Do you feel like, is that true? Because it feels that way. Like if we look back even over the last 100 years where things have come decade after decade, and we look at where we are now, now it feels like things are changing. You know, as Karen and I have been talking about, we want to create a certain type of digital platform or a streaming network or whatever it is. That game changes now every 6 months to a year rather than a block of years. So do you feel like you're getting downloaded with that information in terms of things are actually speeding up?
Absolutely. And you know, 2020, when the three guides of the light first came in, they said that from 2020 to 2024, we would have approximately 100 years worth of evolution and growth and consciousness in the span of 4 years. So they're like, this is going to be a tight squeeze, forcing people in essence to meet their shadow, heal and mend their stuff, choose who they're going to be, choose how they're going to be different. And it's going to put a squeeze on the planet to make this rapid. So it is fast and it is changing, and technology is changing so fast and the way things work is changing, but people are also opening to consciousness and whichever their path is fast. But here's an interesting thing that just recently happened. Things were moving so, so fast that even just, was it 2 weeks ago? Spirit actually had to pull and slow time just for, I think it was about 10 days or something. They pulled and slowed time to give a few more moments for some to catch up or to insert different things in the progression of awakenings. Mm. Now, I didn't get the full picture of exactly what all those things were, but there's this really weird time slow stretch thing happening. And when I tuned in, they're like, we just had to, I'm trying to find something to show you the imagery, but if I had a necklace here with beads and I pulled the beads apart like that, they had to pull time a little bit to be able to insert and change some things so that we wouldn't go in the wrong direction.
Wow. Was that like the end of March?
Yeah, it was end of March, right into the beginning of April.
Yeah, I felt that. Because now it does feel like it's sped up again.
Oh my goodness.
You can feel that energy.
Jeez. Yeah. are going really, really fast.
Yeah.
Jeanette, just listen. I mean, you do such a great job of explaining all this. So thank you for that. If you are talking to somebody about this whole ascension process, is there one to kind of dumb it down for some of us who are really trying to do it? What are some simple practices that we can use in our own lives to try to amp ourselves up to that level of ascension?
So first of all, I would really recommend, and again, these are things that I have done too. So notice your triggers. If we notice our triggers and actually instead of running from the trigger, turned around and looked at it, and we're willing to see what it is, that's a great gateway into getting to know self. Because what it does is it allows us to understand some of the patterns of what we do. And as soon as we understand it, we snap into this slightly higher frequency. Every time we mend and heal something, our light bulb gets brighter of our soul frequency. So diving into any healing that needs to be done is a great place to start because we tend to avoid it because it's uncomfortable. So that's a really great thing to do. On another note though, parts that don't need the healing and the deep digging and all of that is spending time getting to know self. And I'm always reminded of Runaway Bride with Julia Roberts, but there's a scene where she finally realizes she was always doing whatever her husband or fiance wanted. And she realized she didn't even know what kind of eggs she liked. So one day she sat and she made herself scrambled eggs, poached eggs, over easy omelet. And she tried them all to see what she actually liked. And she's like, oh, I realize I hate those three, but I like this one. She was willing to take the moment to get to know her. So it's like date yourself, figure out who you are, because when you do that, you will know your frequency. And then when you know your frequency, you will know what things you're drawn to. You'll know if spirit comes near and is giving you insights, you'll feel the frequency. You'll feel the frequency of your life path and purpose. So I think if there was two simple things to do for the human self to open those doors and crack those doorways would be those. And then from there, it's like following the pull. What are you drawn to? Are you drawn to tarot cards? Are you drawn
to right. Well, and I think your point too about figuring out your frequency and knowing that your frequency will continue to change. So as you become more of who you are, and or you recognize the certain times where you're at a lower frequency, but you're able to raise yourself back up to whatever level you've been at, and then you're continuing to ascend, and then you are attracting other frequencies that are like yours. And at certain points, you're able to recognize when you are not communicating with other right frequencies. So when something doesn't feel right, having the ability to walk away from that because it's not syncing with where you are in life is important. And that could be part of triggers. Is that part of the things that make you trigger?
Absolutely. And I think if there's one third part that brings that all together is conscious choice. Like when I had my NDE, the greatest message out of my whole book, my whole spiel, my whole everything, to zero it down to something tiny would be conscious choice is our greatest gift as humans. We consciously can choose what our next step is. And the universe is continually waiting for us to take the next step or choose the next step so they can co-create with us. But we have to consciously do that. And when we realize we hold that key of conscious choice, we then become powerful creators. But we tend to forget that.
Can we give our listeners an example of a conscious choice?
Yeah. So how about something as simple as the food you eat? In a moment of being hungry, you're hungry and your idea is you want to make changes in your lifestyle and you want to do all these things. But when you get down to the moment of your hunger and you have a chocolate bar in front of you, or you have carrots and hummus, and you catch yourself in that moment and think, okay, so if I was in a rush, I would grab the chocolate bar because it's tasty. That's not me consciously choosing. I'm just doing. Now in this conscious moment, what do I need? What is going to help me in the steps that I want going forward? And if it's, say, trying to shape up, then you're probably going to consciously make that next right choice. And so I think we need to remember that conscious choice are the choices in the moments. It's not the big design plan. It's what am I doing now? What are the next steps in the moment? Just as much as if you were to consciously choose that chocolate bar in the moment, well, then go for it. But consciously choose to enjoy the chocolate bar
exactly.
For the moment.
Exactly. Yes.
Don't just slurp it and be like, oh, I shouldn't have. It's like,
yes.
No, so I'm going to enjoy this, keep it in the right frequency of my body and move ahead.
That's huge.
It is all about the choice in the moment and being present in that moment when you make that choice. And I go back to the music too, because the music is something when you're really in a bad mood, you're down in the dumps, literally. You don't necessarily, sometimes you want to relish that a little bit, but you can make that choice of just to put music on and not feel better, but you can allow that music to kind of bring you up one level in your frequency.
In that moment, moment, you could be in a really dark moment of total anger. But if you can even catch consciously in that moment, be like, I am so mad right now. I am so mad. And I'm on the verge of either yelling at Joe Schmo over there, or what can I do to honor my anger right now? And it's like, okay, well, I have this whole basket of stuffed animals. So I'm going to consciously choose to be in my room here. I'm going to throw these stuffed animals at the wall as hard as I can. Yeah. And even in that moment, you're consciously choosing not false positivity, but it's just recognizing that in every moment,
you
choose, what do I need to do here?
That's right.
Instead of bypassing or pushing something.
Sometimes you do just need to feel it.
And I think there's sometimes too where we don't know better, but then when we know better, we can do better.
Yes, exactly.
So we didn't know better before and did a thing. We can't beat ourselves up for not knowing better, but now we do. Better choice. It's just consciously choosing in those moments what we can do.
I love that.
And that's the work we're here to do.
Yeah.
So being able to recognize that for what it is, that's what I'm here to learn.
And so are those the kind of lessons that you talk about in your book, Avalon to Aurora? And I'm assuming, is that the book that came out of your near-death experience?
Yes, absolutely. In there was lessons to guide your life on earth. Lessons imposed to me from that whole experience of how we can live more consciously and really make the most of this experience. Because again, from my soul perspective, I was like, wow, do I ever value a human life, my human life? Not for fear of immortality, because on the other side, I was like, well, there's no immortality. Like, I'm right here. I'm no different, is how I felt. But how much I can gain and learn and grow in this existence. And so part of that even speaks to not wanting to give up what I'd already accomplished because of how much more I could do. So for people, for example, I talked to a client the other day who was like, I used to be a not good person, but I'm a good person now. And so if I can at least show people how to do better, then I'm doing something. And I was like, oh my God, exactly that. It's now that you are who you are and you can understand that you are a beautiful teacher for people. So make the most of the time you have now. The moment you choose that your life has value is the moment where you sit in the driver's seat of that co-creation. You're not meant to just suffer or be horrible or be limited or any of those things. We all have experiences to bring us to a point of being able to share, teach, grow, all of that. Because our reason for coming to this planet as a human is to both teach and share and learn. Teacher and a student at the same time as we're moving through. That's what it's about.
That's so true. And I also want to point out to those listening that you didn't feel any pain when you crossed over. I think that there are some people that are actually scared of pain in that sense.
So what's really interesting is for me, it was just so seamless. It was just, now if I speak to the experience of having talked to thousands of souls who have crossed over in the various different ways, some from being shot, some from being in a car accident, some from being murdered gruesomely, some from having illness or disease, instant passings, heart attack, you name it. They only hang on to the idea of pain if they're still in the trauma of it, but it's still not even the pain. What happens most of the time, 99.9% of the time, I will put it that way. And this is something that I knew as a kid and didn't know how I knew until Spirit explained it. But anyway, if we take the example of somebody having a head-on collision, say with a semi, okay, so little car, semi. What I was shown one time from one spirit is that when the car was like a millimeter away from hitting the semi, like that frozen moment in time is when the soul popped out of the body. It was out right at that moment. So they didn't have to feel the impact, right? Most of the time, again, 99.9, I will say, because I can't say 100%, but majority of the time, the soul will actually leave or detach a certain amount from the body so they don't feel the pain. Mm-hmm. And even you hear this with some people that have near-death experiences from an injury, but then choose to come back. They don't remember getting the injury. They're on the other side, but it isn't until they come back in after choosing to be human that they register the pain. But we're not meant to take that pain with us when we're crossing over.
That's really helpful.
It is.
And truly, leading up to my experience, I already had such a belief that we continue on, all of this, but if there was a shred of doubt or questioning, it's completely gone now after that experience. Like, we do not cease to exist. We carry on. We actually feel more full than how we are here. It's only in the human experience that we feel an idea of separation or limitation in our human constructs. So when we come to that time, it is a reunion. It is a homecoming. It is a breath out. That's how I could explain it.
Oh, and I loved how yours was a family. Speaking of experiences, can you tell us a little bit about how, if someone has a session with you, what would they expect as an experience with you?
So if it was in mediumship, it's basically I open up the door to spirit and whatever is meant to come through comes through. I really don't know what it's going to be until we start. So it can be messages from loved ones, from spirit guides. It could be about your future, your past, could be about a loved one's passing and closure, could be from your light being saying, hey, it's time to step up and do this or that. So, I mean, it could be a lot of that. I don't do as much mediumship right now just because I've been doing a lot more teaching and mentorship. So in mentorship, I've been teaching other people how to open their skills and abilities because I really think, I believe 100% we all have access to these things, and it's about breaking it down and making it applicable. So I kind of say that in either my mentorship courses or the one-on-one mentorship that I do is about me helping to teach people to pack their backpack for a journey that I've done many times. So I'll help you figure out what the gear is, how to use it, how I pack it. You do what you want with it, shift and change, but at least you're going to be set to go journey in the world of communicating with spirit, how that works, what to look out for, and all of that. So that's what people can expect in that. And then in my cosmic consciousness, though, if people join me on that one, if they want to know deep dives into things, that's where we really expand consciousness. And I bring through channeled messages, divine insights about whether it be different light beings, consciousness of water, or what is solar consciousness, what is earth doing to hack the matrix, what is, you name it.
I'm signing up. I mean, we are there. Is this all through Avalon Spirit? Is this, if people go to avalonspirit.com, they'll find, and can you talk about what Avalon Spirit is?
Yeah. So Avalon Spirit is basically my business partner and I, Lois Naharney, she helped partner with me to create this platform for consciousness, for expanding consciousness. And so my podcast is on there. The offerings that I have for people is on there, but we also have different practitioners as well, from Akashic record reading, past life regression, spiritual hypnosis, shamanic healing and clearing spaces, a couple other mediums to help out with the amount of sessions, and they're all vetted by me and fantastic. We have astrology, we have animal communication, again, all the different avenues and tools to access consciousness. And so really it's a platform for that, for people to explore. And it was my promise to spirit basically during my NDE that I would come back and do more, step up yet again, do more. And so Lois lovingly paired with me to create this platform, which really allowed me a greater reach in the podcast and in my YouTube channel to spend time sharing information, because my goal is just to share information with people. It's like, here's thoughts on this. I do a thing called Making Sense of Life, for example, on my YouTube channel. And it's all about what are mediums? How do mediums communicate? What do ghosts look like? Why does spirit come and visit in our dreams? What are low vibration spirits? All those questions that you would have of like, well, what about this? What about this? And why does the moon matter? And why? It's just a sharing of info to find people at the right time.
There's so much. People need to take advantage of all of the information that you're sharing and the wisdom that's coming through you. I feel like we have so much to learn.
We do. And that you break it down to very basic questions and answers, because as we know, there is so much and you can go really deep. I want to know the answers to some of the questions you even just raised. So
it's all on the YouTube page. If you go there, there's tons there.
So I'm going to tell everybody right now that if you want to find more from Jeanette, you can go to avalonspirit.com. You can follow her on Instagram at Jeanette, GINETTEBIRO.medium. That's her Instagram, is JeanetteBiro.medium. Facebook is at Avalon Spirit, and YouTube is at Jeanette Biro Medium. We're so grateful. I know that our frequencies have aligned. I really feel like there is a reason that we are now connected. I feel we are so aligned in what we all want to do and help awaken and others and help humanity ascend.
Absolutely. It's at this time right now. These are divine alignments at this time to create this wave of awakening. And so I love that there's many souls doing this. It's about people coming together. That's why I love what you guys are doing with the Seeking Center. It's people coming together to offer avenues.
Yes. By the way, you also have your book, Avalon to Aurora, which people can find on avalonspirit.com as well as on Amazon, correct?
Yes.
Great. And if we're interested in those classes, those are also there as well, and the mentorship.
Yes. And also, there's a couple other classes available too that people can get online too. So if people want to dive into Pleiadians, Nocturians, and the Galactic Federation, there's a section on that. And I'm putting up more stuff all the time. I'm so passionate to do that. So people can keep checking the website every once in a while for new offerings.
Yeah. We will.
Thank you so much, Jeanette. I learned so much. I feel like you did too.
Oh my gosh. I have a list here that I've been just writing down. So thank you for doing that.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Jeanette.
Thank you, Jeanette.
I'm grateful. And thank you guys for this beautiful opportunity and platform.